Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hello. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. This is Peter Schiff. We're doing a live episode of Wall Street Unspun. It is Wednesday, February 14th at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We do the show live every Wednesday at this time. I broadcast on the website at www.europact.net. And on shortwave radio frequency 5.07 megahertz. And again, if anybody is listening to the program, if they have friends that want to listen to it, it is rebroadcast on the website or is available to be downloaded on the website anytime at www.europact.net on the weekly radio broadcast archives. Usually it might take a couple of days before it's posted, but it will be up there. Anyway, a couple of things to talk about. Well, first of all, the telephone number, as you know, we're running a call-in show here. I want to get as much participation from the audience as possible, particularly from your Pacific Capital clients, although you can certainly call if you're a prospective client. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let me check the boards. It looks like no one has called in yet, so be the first one to call. Anyway, a couple of things to let you know about on media appearances. I will be doing Squawk on the Street on CNBC tomorrow morning. I believe I'm going to be on at about 9:45 a.m. Eastern Time, 6:45 a.m. Pacific Time. Probably talking about the stock market and gold. That'll be a short segment, too, so make sure you probably should tune in a little early because it'll probably only be a 4 or 5 minute segment that will be done. Also, I will be on a one-hour show on Bloomberg on Monday, on President's Day. I'm taping that on Friday morning, so it's not live. But I think it's going to run from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg, and it's a kind of like a roundtable discussion. And so I'll be there, I think, for the entire hour. So CNBC tomorrow, Thursday morning, and then Bloomberg Television on Monday, early evening. And right now I have a notice about the CNBC appearance on my website, and tomorrow after that one is done, I will update it to reflect the Bloomberg appearance. And remember, too, whenever I have appearances, a lot of times I learn about these appearances either the morning of or maybe the day before. And so if you really want to know about them, you got to check my website regularly, because if I am on a show, I post it on the website. And then you can check it in the morning, and you can find out if I'm going to be on later that day or the next day. I mean, initially I started sending out emails, but then I started going on the show too often, but I just didn't want to send too many emails. So people who are interested and who want to catch these appearances, the best thing to do is just, you know, come to the website every day, and then you'll know. Now, you should go to the website any day anyway. I put a lot of really good news stories on there. And, I mean, some excellent, excellent stories. Every day there's usually at least a dozen brand new stories related to the market, the economy, good stuff. I mean, and so you should make a point to visit the site anyway just to read the stories. And then once a week I put my commentaries up there. So it's definitely worth going to the site anyway. And while you're there, you can check and you can make sure, you can see if I have any TV appearances that day or scheduled for the following day. Usually a day in advance is about all the advance warning I get, or advance notification. Because these guys, you know, they're producing these shows and, you know, they're last minute looking for people. Because they're news driven, so they don't really necessarily know what's going to be in the news. And so they basically react to what's happening and they try to book guests. I just got back from the Money Show. I know John Catalfo. I haven't had a chance to even listen to it, so I assume he did a pretty good job last week while I was in Orlando for the Money Show. I enjoyed seeing some of you at the conference, the client-only event, and as well as my workshops. Maybe if anybody was at the Money Show, and they wanted to call up to talk about what they thought of it, their experience there, it'd be a good time to call. The next time I will be at a money show will be in Las Vegas. It's on my website. It's coming up sometime in May. So, you know, if you were thinking about going, this would be another opportunity to visit me at the money show. Also, an update on my book. I thought I was going to have copies of my book at the money show, but they didn't make it. So if anybody was at the money show and you were wanting to buy my book, it's, unfortunately, it wasn't available. I finally got a copy myself in the mail a couple of days ago. I got one copy. And it looks pretty good. You know, it should be out in a couple of weeks. In fact, you can go on my website now with a link to Amazon, and you can now search inside the book. So you can read about a quarter of chapter one. You can read, you know, the flaps, the back flap, you know, the front flap. You can read the back of the book. So you can get a lot of information, you know, just going to the site now. And if you haven't already ordered a copy, you know, make sure and go on my website and order it. That way you will get your copy as soon as they're available. And as I said, I think they're going to be shipping in a couple of weeks. They've already been shipped out to the stores. I mean, the printers have shipped them out. So they just got to get them, and they've got to stock them and whatever. They got to turn them around. But I wouldn't expect Amazon to be shipping them out for another 2 weeks. So, but if you get, you know, go on my website and order it, and you'll be, you know, you'll be in line, to get one of the first copies. Well, a lot of news has been coming out. A lot of news has been coming out recently. Yesterday, of course, we got the trade numbers, not only for the month of December, but we got the total for 2006. And the trade deficit came out a little worse than expected, above $60 billion. But, of course, the year 2006 was maybe about $30 billion shy of an $800 billion record deficit. And it was the highest, the largest trade deficit on record. Of course, the only trade deficit bigger was the one from 2005. And the only one bigger, you know, and the next one was 2004. And the next one was 2003. Every single year we break a record. You know, it's a string, a successing string of records that really, you know, we don't want to break. And these are nothing to brag about. But, and we had another, you know, lousy or the worst trade deficit ever. And what was interesting enough, on the same day, and I wrote a commentary about this, which will be up on my site tomorrow, but we had a big jump up in the price of Alcoa because there were rumors, there was an article about Rio Tinto and BH Billiton, two large Australian mining companies, were considering making a takeover bid for Alcoa. And, of course, this is really interrelated to the trade deficit. And because we're running such enormous trade deficits, foreigners, you know, we're exchanging our currency for goods. Foreigners have a lot of our currency, and, of course, they use it to buy our assets since they don't need it to buy our products. And I'm pointing out in this commentary that this is about a $40 billion takeover were it to happen. But basically our trade deficit last year put enough foreign currency, our dollars, in our trading partners' hands to finance 20 Alcoa buyouts. 20. I mean, that's enormous. I mean, and basically what's going on is, you know, we are hawking our assets. We are selling off our cows and now and importing the milk. And, you know, this is evidence of a nation in decline. But, of course, nobody in the conventional media sees it that way. You know, I mean, no one even picked up on bothering to relate these two stories together. But, you know, it's major. And, of course, if Alcoa gets bought out, that's a significant loss. That was a, you know, company that's been in business since, like, 1880 in the United States. You know, and all of a sudden it would no longer be American. And, you know, that's significant. That's a significant, you know, loss. Of course, no one points that out. And, of course, no one even cares about the trade desk. You know, I was watching Ben Bernanke testifying on television today in front of the Senate. And somebody actually asked him, they said, you know, are you happy about the trade deficit and the size of it and what it's doing? And so he said, no, I'm not happy about it. So at least, you know, but he didn't really act too concerned. He didn't express any real concern over the sustainability of the trade deficit or what the trade deficit means, you know, to what is it saying about us as a nation? And, you know, interestingly enough, I was quoted, and you can read the whole story on my website. There's a, you know, Peter Schiff in the news section. But I was quoted in the Washington Post It was, I was the last quote in the article, and about the trade deficit and about the problems. But anyway, I got a call this morning from an aide to a congressman who had been at a congressional hearing today with the, our U.S., the trade minister over there, whoever the high guy is for, trade. I forget the name of the position. Not a cabinet officer, but something else. But they had a congressional hearing on the trade deficit and what to do about it, or is it a problem? Which, of course, there is. I mean, they don't need to convene hearings. That's all government does. They try to study things, they think to study things that include the obvious. But apparently, this congressman who read the Washington Post actually read my quote in the committee, in the meeting. And it was a pretty bearish quote. I mean, I think I said something like, instead of producing products, we're printing money, and that we're in some serious trouble. I mean, it was, a negative thing that they're probably not used to seeing. So I can imagine this guy was saying, well, according to Peter Schiff at Europe Pacific Capital, I mean, it's a big problem. Who the hell is he? But it's interesting that, people are now quoting me in Congress. And it would be interesting, I told them that, if they're having, more investigations, if they need someone to testify that we're having a problem, I'd certainly be willing to do it. I said, I don't think that the congressman would like my solutions or what I propose as a solution. But I'm certainly willing to testify if they want that there's definitely a problem that needs a solution. Not that anything that the government would do would help. All they want to do is erect trade barriers. I mean, that's not going to do anything. Although what that's going to do is expose the problem. Because the trade deficit isn't the problem. The trade deficit is the symptom, is the expression of the problem. The problems are deeper. The problems are with the U.S. economy fundamentally that is producing these trade deficits. The problem is our lack of investment, our lack of savings. The problem is high taxes and high regulation. The problem is too easy a monetary policy. There are a lot of problems, the result of which is that we're running a trade deficit. The trade deficit shows you what those problems are doing and the imbalances they're creating. But you can't address the trade deficit. You've got to address the problems that are creating the trade deficit. Anyway, I've got a caller on hold, Steve calling from Indiana. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Peter. It's good to talk to you again. I'm a customer of Europe Pacific Capital, and I'm happily invested around the world, but I do have a concern, and that is a theme that was the foundation of nearly everything that they teach in business school is that high investment returns are the reward for compensation for undertaking risk. Typically, the higher the returns, the greater the risk. Of course, they also define the risk-free investment as U.S. Treasuries, and we all know what you think of that. But I can't shake the belief that outsized investment returns are accompanied by outsized risk. I'm newly retired, and approximately 13% of my net worth is now invested in 5 of the Canadian gas and oil energy trusts. Can you discuss the risks that you see in these trusts, which currently have dividend yields of up to 20% and beyond?
Yeah, I've even seen, I was talking to a client today and pulled up his account, and based on the current price, the yield on one of his trusts was 25%. But obviously, look, the major risks are the price of oil and natural gas, because that's really what these trusts represent. Now, did you own these trusts prior to their drop recently with the change in the taxation?
No. I hadn't even heard of them until one of your investment representatives introduced me to them.
But how long ago did you buy them for the first time?
Last week.
All right. I mean,
so I got in at a good price.
Look, everything is, there's always risks, right? But I think that the biggest risk to these things was the government changing the tax structure. And that's already happened. So the biggest risk is already priced into the stock because it's now happened. It's not like, well, are they going to do it? They've already done it. So I think these things right now are great buys. I think they're underpriced. And I think even if oil and gas prices don't rise or fall, that these stocks still have a room to appreciate. And they have a lot of dividends. So, I think they're great buys, but, there's always risk. And so that's why, people say, well, why don't, we don't recommend. And most of my clients, when they come to me, I put, 20 or 25% of an account in these types of assets. they really produce tremendous yields, and it really helps the overall dividend yield. The rest of the stuff we buy tends to yield, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7% on the high side, with a few stragglers a little more than that. But what it does is by putting 20, 25% energy, you know, Canadian trusts, you know, we can end up with 7, 7.5% yields on the total portfolio, even though the majority of the stocks in the portfolio yield less than that. But it lets us get a lot of diversification because you never know. I mean, anything can happen. You know, as we can see, they've already dropped. So there's always risks. But I try to weigh the risks and weigh the risks of owning dollars. I mean, people constantly, you know, don't understand that. I mean, I had a client the other day who was referred to me, and I forget if I mentioned it on my show. I don't think so. He was referred to me by his brother. And, you know, he sent in like $350,000, which he took from Unibonds, and we were going to invest it, you know, in some good dividend-paying foreign stocks. And I was in New Orleans when, I mean, in Orlando when the money came in, and a day or two later he calls me and he wants it all back. He had a change of heart. He's too worried about losing it, and he wants to put it back in his muni bonds. Now, he had a few million in muni bonds, so he was only taking a small percentage. But the guy is so concerned about the risk of what I was doing, he's ignoring the risk of what he's already doing, which is keeping all of his money in U.S. currency. And he's so focused on, I'm afraid, what if I lose some of my dollars? What if I send some money to Euro Pacific Capital and I lose my dollars? He's missing the bigger picture that even if he doesn't lose any dollars, even if he keeps 100% of his dollars are going to lose their purchasing power. They're going to lose their value.
Well, I'm certainly sold on that part of the argument. I spent the day watching the U.S. dollar index slide all day long.
Once you understand that you can't own dollars, that the dollar is the riskiest thing you can do with your money, then we have to build a portfolio of things that are not dollars. And I think it makes sense, given my outlook for the price of oil, and given the yield on these things, that it makes sense to include them within a portfolio, but don't go crazy. Don't put all your money in Canadian trust. But
okay, so I think we've got about 25% of my investment there. And the rest of it is in conservative things like...
And you don't put them all in one stock. You know, buy a few of them, you know.
Well, there are five of them.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine because...
But anybody with a traditional business education gets nervous when he starts seeing 20 and 25% yields.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't know. Like, I talked to a client today who was working with a broker who's not with me now, but she had started her account, and, you know, she ended up putting a much higher percentage of that in energy trusts. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, I wasn't involved in conversations. Sometimes people tell me they really want the yield, and that's what they want. And so, say they were a little over-leveraged, and, I mean, overexposed, and then the stocks drop, and then they get home. Now they see a big drop in their account. So, you know, part of the reason that you don't want to have too much in one thing is if it does go the wrong way, I mean, some people, it's gonna affect their outlook.
Well, it all depends on where you're coming from. If you're someone who's in your 30s and 40s, have plenty of time to recover from a mistake, it's one thing. But if you're 62 or 63 years old, you have a completely different perspective on what the long term means.
Most of my clients who have, you know, energy trusts in a smaller percentage, say, you know, 20, 25%, they didn't even notice a drop in their accounts. They've noticed their accounts kind of stagnating for the past 4 or 5 months as everything else that went up offset the declines in the Canadian stuff. And, of course, they had their dividends. But, you know, I think the Canadian stuff is bottoming out, and I do, you know, expect them to start rising over the next year or two. And, you know, certainly if the Canadian government softens its stance, and makes a change that's favorable to these trusts, there could be a huge, huge rally.
Well, I'm greedy, like everyone else, but I got out my trusty calculator, and the thought of doubling my money in 3 or 4 years was very, very appealing on one level, but on another level, it was kind of frightening.
Well, the yields are very high, and so, yeah, even over the next 4 or 5 years, you get back most of your money in dividends. And, you know, the stocks would have to be worth zero by then for you to really, you know, have a bad investment. And, of course, they're not going to be worth zero. They'll be worth something. It won't be zero.
Okay.
Even if they're worth less than they are, it could still be a fantastic return. In fact, even if they're worth half of what they are now, but you got 20-25% return for 4 or 5 years, you're still going to have a good return, even if half your principal is gone.
But you're comfortable with, everything here depends upon the company's estimates of their reserves and how long they're going to last. If the gas and oil is going to continue to be there to sell, then I'm much more comfortable because I personally am on board with the idea that energy costs have nowhere to go but up. I mean, they might blip downwards like they did earlier this year, but I fully expect the price of oil to soar as the months and the years go by.
Can I talk to you for a second? I think that, you know, a year from now, you know, oil prices will be, you know, higher than they are today, potentially considerably higher, and I think gas prices will be a lot higher. So I think this winter was, you know, a mild winter. We can't count on that again next winter. And I think a lot more is going to play into the demand other than just, you know, what the temperature is in the United States. Is the caller still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, but anyway, so I think you're fine, and just make sure not to, you know, realize that we recommend a lot of stuff other than Canadian Trust. There's a lot of great stuff we're buying in Europe, a lot of stuff we're buying in Asia. And so make sure to strike a balance and get enough diversification in enough countries and enough currencies that you're really well diversified and well protected.
I'm real happy with that, with what we've done so far. And from my point of view, my investments in the past were mutual funds where, except in a general sort of way, you really didn't know anything about what companies you owned. Whereas now, I know it's a coal miner. I know it's a utility in Australia or a water purification company in Singapore or whatever. And there's an element of fun to it as well, which is interesting.
Well, it's good to know what you own.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate the business and look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, let me take a quick break. I know we got a couple of callers on hold. We'll go back to the calls in a minute. Let's play the commercial on how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital, and we'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and again, the telephone number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Also, too, you know, we've seen a pretty big jump up in the prices of gold and silver. They've been rising kind of steadily. Today, silver was above $14 an ounce for the first time in a while. Gold got above 670. It was, you know, in the futures, I think it was like 666 was the high in the spot market. The highest it's been in about 8 months. The charts look really good. Gold stocks have been inching higher, but again, following the metal. Gold is doing a lot better. Basically, the last time gold prices were at this level, the gold stocks, the Huey, was 7% higher than it is right now. The last time gold prices were a little bit lower than they are right now. So again, it shows that the real money is, you know, the real physical money is flowing into the market. But the speculative money, the people who are betting on the future price of gold, who are doing it to the stock market, are still nervous. They're still expecting gold prices to fall. which is very bullish. And, you know, this entire leg of the market, the last several years, this is how it's been. It's been the metals leading the stocks. You know, at the very beginning, at the, you know, in 2002, 2003, the stocks led the metal, right? But recently, it's been the metal leading the stock. A lot of people interpret that as being bearish. I have been interpreting that as being bullish. I do think at some point you're going to see a lot more money getting into the gold stocks once we have a lot more belief that this is a real rally and that gold is going higher. And, you know, I think we're going to be back above 700 relatively soon. We might even be above 700 before the end of the month. If you still have not bought your gold, you know, you got to do it. I've been, you know, telling people for years to buy gold, buy gold. It's not going down. It's going higher. And, you know, I think gold's a good buy right here. I expect it to go higher, not lower. You know, it would have been better if you followed my advice and bought those last big dips. I was pounding the table on that. I was writing commentaries, telling people to buy gold, that it wasn't going any lower. The way that we sell gold is through the Perth Mint in Australia. It's not the only way to buy it. You know, it's good to have some physical gold in your own possession, but I think it's one of the best ways to own gold. That's why I sell it. If you want to get information on the Perth Mint, it's on my website, also at www.goldyoucanfold.com. And, you know, you can call the Newport Beach office. Danny Dwyer is there, 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350, for information on how to buy gold, silver, and platinum at the Perth Mint in Australia. Anyway, let me go to the phone calls and take Tyler calling from California. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Good. How are you?
Good. Listen, I caught your show a little late today. Did you comment on the article you wrote on China in your last article?
Did I? No.
Okay, because you mentioned basically that, from what I read, I understood that, what do you feel China's stock market is overvalued right now?
Well, I said I think there could be a bubble there. You know, the market has moved up a lot, and I think it's going to go a lot higher. And, you know, there are some stocks that are trading at, you know, multiples that are pretty high relative to what they have been in China. You know, and a lot of stuff has been going up, and I think it's going to continue to go up. And I think, you know, there's a lot of money being created in China. Money supply is going through the roof. And a lot of that money is finding its way into financial assets. And, you know, part of the increase, like I said, is justified by the fundamentals. But a good part of it could be inflation-driven. And I had a feeling that the bubble is going to get a lot bigger, though, before it bursts. And at some point, that's going to be a problem. And the stocks that I think are overvalued in China are not the stocks that we're investing our clients' money in. You know, we're trying to be more conservative, and we're trying to buy, you know, stocks that have good yields and lower multiples. But there are a lot of smaller stocks that trade in Shanghai and Shenzhen that have just been on fire. And, you know, this can continue for years.
Well, I also read somewhere that the Chinese government is allowing, because pension funds and whatnot, to invest overseas more. Isn't that bullish for other stock markets?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how much they invest abroad versus in their own markets. Ultimately, it's good for the Chinese to have foreign assets because it means that they receive dividend payments from abroad. I can tell you, I don't think much money, though, would find their way into the U.S. markets. I think if the Chinese invest abroad, it's likely to be in other Asian economies or potentially in Europe. But I really couldn't see any Asian money finding its way to the U.S., or not much.
But it's possible that they would go U.S. Maybe it's not a good idea, but they could make the mistake of putting it in the U.S., which would bump up some.
I think that, you know, it would be not very likely, considering how poorly the U.S. market has done over the last 6 or 7 years. You know, last year in 2006, on a ranking of global markets, the U.S. ranked 54th. So there were 53 other stock markets that did better than us. And, in fact, they did better than us by a wide margin. It wasn't even close. And if you go back, you know, over the last 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever you want to look at, the U.S. has dramatically underperformed the rest of the world. So I don't think somebody from China looking around at, you know, where the yields are, the performance has been, I can't imagine much of their money coming over here.
Also, one more question. I know gold is it's kind of riding high right now. I know you think it's a good investment, but in the short term, do you feel there could be a correction, people covering their positions and whatnot?
Well, I mean, there always can be a correction. You know, I mean, there was just a major correction recently. So, you know, I don't think that gold prices are going to drop sharply from here. You know, I mean, if there's a collection of $20, $25, I mean, it's really not that big a deal. And a lot of times it happens in just one day. You know, all of a sudden you'll see gold down $20, and people get really scared when they see that. You know, but the rallies have been very orderly and very slow. You know, $3, $5, you know, maybe $8, you know. But I would just look, I mean, if you're looking to buy physical gold, you're not using leverage, you just want to own gold, it doesn't even matter whether there's a correction, because the prices is just going to go up. And I think we're going a lot higher. I mean, we're not even, we've barely just, you know, begun. I think once we really take out, you know, the 800 level, you know, once maybe we're trading above 1,000, which could happen this year. I mean, I think there's a good chance that we could be trading above 1,000 this year. But if not this year, then next year, you know, then I think we're really off to a bull market, and, you know, the market's going to keep going. So, you know, just buy it. Don't worry about it. You know, of course, if you're trading futures or options using leverage, it's a different story. And, you know, I'm not talking to those people. I mean, you know, that's a totally different market than what I'm trying to appeal to. The investor, the saver, you know, you just want to buy.
Well, just another question here. Would the U.S. government care? I mean, do they even care about the price of gold? I mean, does that, I mean, people
care? I mean,
as an indicator for inflation, or are they worried the perception of inflation, and could they manipulate the price of gold in any way?
People in the government who understand care. There's probably a lot of politicians that are so ignorant about economics that they have no clue. But I think people at the Fed and people who understand, yeah, of course they know. They're scared. They understand. But that's the last thing they would do. But that's why when Bernanke testified today, he doesn't talk about gold. He doesn't want to mention gold. But he knows that it's a problem. You know, I mean, the only time the Federal Reserve mentioned gold was when it was lower. I remember reading an interview with one of the voting governors, and he said that he looked at the price of gold all the time as an indication of whether monetary policy was too weak or too easy or too tight. And he said that if gold's above 400, it tells me we're too easy. If it's below 300, it means we're too tight. At the time, of course, gold was at 350, so he looked like everything was great. But, you know, if gold above 400 means you're too easy, what does gold above 650 mean? And, you know, but no, I mean, this is the biggest canary in the coal mine, you know, and then it's yellow. So, no, they want no one to notice it, and they want to pretend that they're not worried, that they're not even looking at it. But, of course, it's probably one of the first things that Bernanke looks at in the morning, I bet, is the price of gold. Yet he wouldn't admit that to anybody.
Interesting. Also, do you, I mean, just from our readings about hedge funds and whatnot, I mean, I come to the understanding that these hedge funds can push a lot of things around as prices, at least in the short term, can create a lot of volatility.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of hedge funds out there. There's 9,000 hedge funds. They use a lot of leverage, and you know, they move around, and they create volatility. And you don't want to get scared away from it. In fact, if anything, you want to profit from it. You know, if there's something you want to buy and a bunch of hedge funds sell it one day and the price goes down, it's a good opportunity for you.
Okay. That's it, Peter.
A bunch of hedge funds are rushing money into the market on a given day, and you're looking to buy on that day, you might want to wait because, you could get caught in a spike.
Interesting.
All right, Tyler. Well, have you ordered my book yet?
No, I haven't. I'm reading something now, but I'm definitely going to...
It's on the Internet, on my website at europac.net. It's a picture of the book right on the front page. You know, click on it and order it.
Okay.
Like to anybody who's listening to the show, if you haven't gotten around to ordering my book, you got to order it. In fact, order a few copies. You know, that way you have some from your friends so you don't lose your copy. And I want to sell, you know, we want to sell a lot of these books right away so that we can maybe get the book on a bestseller list You know, because once it starts to sell, it'll draw some attention. Maybe it'll get more reviews, and it'll force people to look at this topic and this subject. You know.
All right, Peter. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye. And now I've got a call. Also, I've got Harry from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Harry.
I can hardly hear you.
I can hear you fine.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I recently bought an oil and gas fund in Singapore through my broker.
Is your broker Euro Pacific Capital?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Nowhere else. Do you know much about, I gave them some questions about the fund, and it sounded pretty interesting and all. And
was it a stock?
It was a stock.
Yeah, okay.
And it sold in 100,000 units or something like that, sold in volumes of 1,000 units.
Yeah, most of the stocks over there trade in board lots. Yeah, 1,000 is probably the most common unit.
Right.
But, you know, you're talking about, I think I know the stock you're talking about. I think it's $3 a share. So
yeah.
Even if you buy 1,000 shares, you're only investing $3,000.
I think I put like
a lot of money, yeah.
$14,000 into it.
Yeah.
The other day. Does that have a good track record? Or?
Well, it's an individual stock. I mean, we don't like to really talk too much about individual stocks on the radio.
Okay.
But SEC and NASD know your customer rules.
Right.
Do that individually. That way we can make sure that the people we're talking to are suitable and on all that, you know, that stuff. But, you know, yeah, any of the stuff that we're recommending to you, I mean, I think that particular stock has about a 6% dividend yield, and it's got a lot of interesting things going on. And I love Singapore as an economy, as a nation to invest in. It's one of my favorite countries. And it's a great way to get exposure to China and Southeast Asia. You know, they're like the Singapore. Singapore is like the Switzerland of Asia.
Well, it was the first time I have invested in Singapore. I have some stuff in China. I have a lot of the Canadian trusts. And I was kind of, you know, he said that right now you're pretty loaded with Canadian trust, and he suggested the Singapore.
Yeah, I mean, looking at an individual account, I mean, if you have too much in Canadian trust, it doesn't mean, you know, you want to have, you know, diversification. You don't want to have, you know, too much in just one, you know, particular asset class. You know, we want to be diversified in countries and in currencies and in industries. We don't need to be overly diversified. I mean, and since we're buying good conservative stocks, you know, we don't need to have 50 or 100 stocks to be diversified. You know, you can have 15, 20 stocks and have a really well-diversified portfolio, you know.
I have one last question. Iran is saying they have an announcement in April. Do you have any idea what that's all about?
No idea. I mean, there's a lot of things they could announce. But, of course, you know, the worst thing would, well, I mean, obviously they could, you know, try to, you know, invade Iran, you know, Iran and their, I mean, or Iraq. Were you saying Iraq is going to make an announcement?
No, Iran.
Yeah, Iran. They could, I mean, Iran is a, you know, obviously a military threat. You know, they could do something to Israel. I don't know. But obviously, you know, another thing they can do is, you know, with their oil bores, or, you know, start trading oil in euros. That would be one of the
things. But I was thinking that's
one of the reasons that a lot of people think that we're going to invade them.
Right. You had mentioned that on an earlier program.
In fact, a lot of people think that's the reason that we went into Iraq, was because Hussein was going to start selling oil in euros. You know, that was the real, you know, weapon of mass destruction.
Well, I'm working real hard to get out of the U.S. dollar. I'm having a problem getting my money out of my deferred compensation. For some reason, they're not releasing it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, to the extent you can do that, I'm all for it. You know, because by the time you defer it, but by the time you get it, it might not be worth anything.
Well, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, so get your hands on it now, even if you have to take, like, you know, 20% less. Because now you can take the other 80% and actually get something that might be of value to you.
Well, that's my next project. They haven't had communications with me, and I guess I have to become a little more aggressive with them. But thanks a lot.
All right, Harry. So anyway, thanks for the call, and order the book.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
All right. And before I take the next group of callers, probably just want to go back to a commercial again. And also we can talk about the news that came out today from Daimler Chrysler about, you know, they're calling it the St. Valentine's Day Massacre regarding all the layoffs coming in from some of these Chrysler plants. And I knew this, when this first happened 9 years ago, I couldn't understand why Daimler was buying Chrysler in the first place. I thought it was a bad move on their part. Now finally, you know, people are really acknowledging, you know, what a mistake that was. Buying Chrysler. Anyway, let's take a quick last commercial break, and we'll be back for the last segment of your phone calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk.
Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro-Pacific Capital.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. I've got Lisa on hold from somewhere. I'm not sure. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, how are you? I live in Florida. Well, I've been wondering if it would be appropriate for someone to just open up the Merck mutual fund.
The hard currency fund. Yeah, I mean it's certainly a place to start. It's a very, you know, it's one step, a first step. It's basically foreign money markets. So instead of, you know, going into foreign stocks or foreign bonds, you're basically opting for the equivalent of a bank account in Germany and, you know, Australia and something like that, just instead of holding money in a U.S. money fund. And there's certainly going to be a lot less volatility in the Merck fund than there might be in stocks, because you take away the stock market volatility. So it is certainly a way to get started, you know, kind of like a baby step, just to have some money in foreign currency. You know, there's no leverage there. You're earning a rate of, you're earning interest. The interest won't be as high as what you would get in stocks, but you know, you're getting less volatility. So it's
that's where I'm at. I just need to take the baby step.
Yeah. So you know, it's a no load mission. If you change your mind, if you decide you don't want to do it, you didn't pay anything to buy it. You know, you don't have to overcome a commission. So it's a very easy way to start moving towards foreign investments. And, you know, just look at it as cash. You know, sometimes you always want to have a cash reserve to take advantage of something. You don't want to have all your money invested. And so, but the money that you don't invest, you don't want to leave in the dollar. That's foolish. So the Merck Fund allows you to leave it in other currencies.
So just to reiterate, the Merck Fund is simply diversifying, they're trading currencies, and but it's, I don't know why I got the impression it was like a money market fund for some reason.
It invests in money market instruments in foreign currencies.
Oh, okay. Okay, now I understand.
Fund because the price changes every day depending on what the dollar is worth relative to these currencies.
Okay.
Basically, in concept, what it's like doing is it's like if you bought, let's say there's a money market fund in Germany, and they have money market funds in Germany. Let's say you bought it. Every day that money fund would be 1 euro per share. But, of course, every day, if you had to price it in dollars, the price would change. So that's what you're doing. When you're buying the Merck fund, it's like buying money market funds in a half a dozen countries around the world.
I understand. What sort of interest has it been paying? And the other...
Well, it's high. I'm not really, you know, whether it's...
Okay.
For some...
Wondered.
Because it's like... And yields in other countries are lower than they are in America for money market, you know, for short term. Our short-term rates are on the high side right now relative to other countries. Those are just nominal rates. But if you adjust for inflation, our rates are really low because our inflation rate is a lot higher than a lot of these other countries.
Okay.
Especially the real inflation rate, not the phony inflation rate that the government pretends.
Do they actually send you a checkbook, like a U.S. money market sends you you wanted to write checks on it?
No, it's not checkable. You'd have to liquidate some shares.
Okay. And then would they, how would you... Okay, they're located in the U.S., but they invest in these foreign currencies.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Just like, you know, Euro-Pacific Capital, we're a U.S. brokerage firm. You have an account with me. It's in America, but that means we can still make all your investments foreign. We can buy stocks in Europe and Asia, you know, and keep them in your American account.
So if I...
And that's what you want to do. You know, interestingly enough, I was watching CNBC today on a Cramer show. And he's talking about, you know, he's got this word now, he's saying Roe, finds Roe, which means rest of the world. And he's really bullish on foreign stocks. And he's saying, look, you got to invest abroad, that's where all the growth is, that's where the strength is. He said, if you're not going to buy foreign stocks directly, at least buy American stocks that earn most of their money abroad. So more and more people now are starting to see the wisdom of investing internationally, investing outside the United States. And I think the more money you have outside the United States, the better.
And with, if I had an account with you, you would put some of the money in the Merck Fund. And
it depends on what your objectives are. You know, it depends on what your time horizon is, what you want to do with your money. But it's a product that we recommend for money that you don't want to invest. I mean, for long-term investments, if you're comfortable with what we're doing, I prefer to actually invest in stocks. They give you higher yield and more potential. But if you're not certain, or if you want to keep certain money liquid, you know, looking for, you know, in case the things that we're recommending go down and you want to scale into the market, you can, you know, you can use the Merck Fund as a parking place while you're waiting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for the call, Lisa.
Okay, bye-bye.
And let's take a call from Chris in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. You know, I just was listening to Bernanke today, and it seems to me that he pretty much says what everybody wants to hear to keep the market happy.
It's basically the job of both the Treasury Secretary and the Federal Reserve Chairman is basically to say exactly what they think the market wants to hear. They basically probably take polls, and they find out, okay, now what should I say? What will produce a positive reaction in the stock market or the bond market? And they wait to figure out what that is, and then that's what they do.
Right. Well, if Wall Street knows this, and I assume they do, why are everybody on pins and needles waiting for him to speak? If kind of he's, they know he's not going to say, oh, I'm going to raise rates, inflation seems to be picking up, we're going to have to, I mean, he knows that's going to send the markets in turmoil.
Yeah, and he's not going to say, I'm worried about the trade deficit, I'm worried about the dollar, I'm worried about the price of gold. They're just going to say how great everything is.
Right.
I mean that's what, you know, it's all a joke, but again, it's one big confidence game. That's all it is. That's what their job is. That's why they got, why do you think they got Hank Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury? They pulled somebody out who's well-respected on Wall Street, so they can put him in the administration, and he can tell everybody from the official podium how great everything is. And they'll say, well, he ought to know. He was the head of Goldman Sachs. They know what, you know.
You know, it just seems to be working. I mean, just the money is just flooding in there, and I'm mostly a little bit of stocks, but mostly cash, and I short a little bit, getting killed on being short a little bit, but it just keeps, I mean, they keep the party going, and they tell people what they want to hear, and I can't see
what to
do to end.
Chris, what you got to do, and when I have this strategy out in my book, Crash Proof, you got to order my book and read it, but I as bearish as I have discouraged people for years from going short. I said, look, short is not the way to go, because when you're short stocks, you're basically betting, you know, if there's inflation, you lose. Because when you're shorting stocks, you're borrowing assets and selling them, and you're accumulating dollars. And, you know, it might be that stocks lose value, but the dollar might lose even more value, which means stocks are still going to rise nominally. So instead of trying to figure out when the market's going to fall, you know, don't worry about it. We are making so much more money investing on the long side, but on the long side of other things. You want to be long foreign stocks. As much as our market is going up, foreign markets are leaving it in the dust. And if you want to be long, you can be long gold stocks. You can be long oil stocks. These stocks are doing better than the average stock that people think about in the U.S. when they buy stocks.
Which foreign markets are you long?
There's a lot of inflation, and it's creating the illusion that assets are rising. Assets aren't necessarily rising. Money is losing value, and you don't want to be in money. You can't just be in a money market fund. You can go broke that way. But you don't want to be in U.S. stocks either. So you got to be in foreign assets, and that's where you need to be. And, you know, even if the markets go up, you know, we're going to go up better over there. And eventually, if the markets collapse, the foreign markets might go down too, but not in terms of dollars, because the dollar will get crushed, and you'll still see positive returns on your foreign markets.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we buy things with big dividends, so we don't give up the yield. You know, we're getting good yields.
Right. Well, like I said, it just seems like they can just keep talking this market up and up and up, and it doesn't seem to hurt. There's, like you said, there's so much money out there, which obviously is inflationary, but there is just so much money out there. This, it goes down 2 or 3%, and there's it's just like a vacuum of money. Will just, or I shouldn't say it's a vacuum. Money just comes right back in to fill that
government. That Wall Street just cannot keep it going indefinitely. If they could, the Nasdaq would be at 10,000 right now or higher. You know, they didn't want the Nasdaq to go from 5,000 to 1,000. They didn't want all these internet stock and tech stocks to blow up and go away, but they did. You know, and there were a lot of people when I was, you know, telling people, you know, not to buy, you know, tech stocks in the 90s. I talked to a lot of people who were convinced that they could never go down because the government wouldn't let it happen, that it would be too bad for the economy, that the government wouldn't let the market go down. Well, you know, it went down. And, you know, people can think, oh, it's going to go on forever, they can keep it up forever, they can keep talking it up forever. They can't. They can't. But in order to profit from it, you don't have to short the market and try to bet that this is the top. Because, you know, there are a lot of people losing their ass doing that.
Right.
Instead of it, just recognize what's going on and get long. But just get long things outside the United States and get long stuff that really is going up for a reason, like gold or silver or something like that. And, you know, when the U.S. market goes, this stuff is going up faster.
Right, right. Well, one thing I am surprised about is, and I used to be in the years ago in the mortgage business, and I do know a lot of people that are still in that business, in the, especially in the mortgage broker business in the subprime market, and you know they have a couple of them have indicated to me how stressed that business is right now with they're tightening up their standards and how I mean they freely admit that they gave loans out to people they just couldn't believe that they would even give loans out to these people but they did and now they're coming back you know obviously they're coming back to foreclosure or they're just delinquent or they made payments for 4 or 5 months and they couldn't handle the payments but it doesn't seem to be going into the prime the subprime market doesn't seem to be affecting the regular Fannie Mae market I guess you would call it.
I mean you got to give it time. It's just starting. I mean it's amazing when I hear these guys like Bernanke say, "Oh, it hasn't spilled over." I mean give it time. It just started. Believe me, by the time this thing is over, it's going to be in every facet of the mortgage industry. You know, you got to go and look on my website right now. There's some great articles. There's one up there today that was on the Los Angeles Times and I have it up there from the Chicago Tribune. It's called "It's Their Default Position." But read that article. It's a fantastic article.
Okay. All right, great. All
right. Right now, exactly the way I predicted it 2 years ago. I wrote stuff talking about how the bubble was going to burst, how the credit was going to eventually contract, how all of a sudden it was going to be impossible to buy with nothing down, and the banks wouldn't lend, and the market for subprime debt was going to decline.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're still lending. I mean, they're still doing it. They're just tightening up a little bit. You know,
but
the target is that the people that they're lending to are just maybe not as risky as the people they lent to a year ago, but they're still lending to a lot of risky borrowers.
You've got to give it time. You've got to give it time for more foreclosures to hit, for the inventory to build. You've got to let the appraisers start coming in at more rational appraisals. It's all going to start to happen. It's all going to unravel. This is the beginning.
Right.
You have all these people talking about it's over, the real estate market has bottomed out, it's turning. It's barely begun the topping process. We've got a long way to go down. It's going to take years before we bottom out, but this is going to be the ugliest real estate decline in U.S. history, and the only thing that's going to stop it is massive inflation, and you know what? That's just going to make the situation worse.
Okay.
And so either way, you know, being in the Euro-Pacific capital, you know, strategy of owning foreign assets and gold and things like that is going to be the better way to go. And either real estate prices are going to collapse or the value of our accounts is going to skyrocket. One or the other.
Okay.
And either way, it doesn't make a difference because on a relative basis, your Euro-Pacific capital account is going to buy you a lot more real estate. That's how I look at it.
More foreign real estate, I take it?
Well, domestic real estate. I mean, ultimately, we live in America. I mean, as long as we know.
Right.
You know, if we're not forced to leave the country because things get so bad. I mean, all the money that we're investing abroad, I'm doing it on the hope that one day we can bring it home and take advantage of some incredible bargains in our own country. I hope that's the situation.
Let me ask you a question, and I'll let you. I don't want to hold up the line here, but do they have the same, like England will say, went through their bubble and Australia went through their real estate bubble. Do they have the same lending standards? Do they have the the 100% financing, the subprime loans as we have. In other words, they went through kind of, they were like a year or two ahead of us.
But they have the same,
when their bubble bursting, and it seems that, I don't know if they had the same type of, I heard that we have, our lending standards are a lot lower than theirs.
Look, they've had a problem, like, you know how we have the liar's loan? They call it lie to buy over there in England. I mean, look, everybody has lax that reduced their standards, but no one has done it as much as the United States. I mean, that's the problem. And these other countries don't have as other big problems, like a lack of domestic savings like we have. You know, they don't have the trade deficits or the current account deficits as big. They don't have, I mean, we have got real serious, serious problems. And this housing bubble, you know, our whole economy is based on the housing bubble. These other countries, that's not the case. And so we're more vulnerable than other countries. I think real estate is overvalued. Residential real estate is overvalued in a lot of markets, and so I wouldn't buy it. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be a disaster for those countries when the prices come down.
Right.
The United States. But, you know, most of that is confined to the English-speaking world, too, the big higher prices, like Australia, like the UK. You won't find that kind of situation in Asia, you know, at all, and certainly not most of Europe.
Right. Okay. Thanks, sir. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Anyway, we're running out of time, so only got a few minutes left, so no more callers. I don't think there's anybody on hold at this point. But, yeah, just getting back to that, I briefly mentioned what's happening with Chrysler. I mean, they're going to be restructuring over at Daimler Chrysler, and they're laying off, 14,000 auto workers and, you know, really admitting to some mistakes in Chrysler. And it just shows you that, you know, the whole American automobile industry, even the part of it that's foreign owned, is having trouble. I mean, the only industries that are still thriving in America are the foreign companies that came in here and set up operations from scratch. But, you know, I think even those companies might have some problems in the economic environment that's coming, you know. Now, when Bernanke testified today, and somebody asked him about the low savings rate, you know, he mentioned that, yes, you know, we're going to be saving again. You know, he mentioned that, you know, people felt they didn't have to save because of rising home prices. They felt, why save when I own real estate and I'm, you know, that's doing the saving for me. Now, he didn't really acknowledge the fact that that was a mistake, that real estate prices could collapse, and therefore Americans will find they don't have adequate savings. He said he thought that savings rates would pick up over time, which obviously they have to. It's negative, and it's negative for the first time since the Great Depression. But he said that he didn't expect that the savings rates would ever return to what they used to be. Now, why? I mean, why is that? I mean, Americans no longer have to save? I mean, what's different? Now we don't have to save anymore? I mean, it's nonsense to think that we don't have to save. I mean, of course we have to save. I mean, how can we not? You know, especially when people are about to see, you know, their net worths wiped out. In fact, Americans, you know, who are now in their, you know, 40s, let's say, who are going to get wiped out in a real estate collapse in their 50s, and they want to retire in 10 or 15 years, they're going to have to save, you know, like it's going out of style. I mean, the savings rate in the United States is going to have to rise to historically high levels. Anyway, we're running out of time. So, again, I want to remind everybody to go to my website at www.europac.net. Make sure to order a copy of my new book, Crash Proof. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. You got to read it. Sign up for the newsletter. There's another issue coming soon, I promise. I know I'm behind in it, but it's coming soon. You know, the research reports are on there. Call the number toll-free, 800-727-7922, to talk to a broker, 800-727-7922, or check the website for the phone numbers in California and Phoenix. Anybody, thanks everybody for listening. I'll be here again next week. Happy President's Day weekend.